Durant. Oh! A jawbreaker!
Curry with a drive. Blocked by Jackson.
Bane, step back three. Bingo!
It's the Core 4 Podcast on the Bluff City Media Podcast Network. Xavier Dotson, David Buckler, joining me, Matthew Gill. Today, guys, we're going to be talking about the Grizzlies' early season roster moves, the problems with the perimeter defense, and give our NBA title contenders ranked by the College Football Playoff Committee. But we got to start here, guys. It's been a rocky start to the season. Grizzlies sitting at 1-7. Haven't won a game at home. They have losses to Washington, Portland, and a 20-point loss at Utah. Xavier, I know you were fired up for this season and pretty bullish. Said that they would win 60 games. It's going to be an uphill climb for that. Where's your panic meter at right now?
Yeah, it's not looking good for that prediction that I made in that earlier podcast episode. But if you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, I put it like at a 5.5 to a 6. I'm not just fully like in frantic mode. We look at those games that they have lost. Out of those 7 games they lost, 6 of them been close games. There's only been one blowout. That was that Jazz game. A lot of them has fell into their hands, which it could be a winnable game, but they just haven't been able to execute. And then as well, it's a lot of guys, unfortunately, really shouldn't be out there playing basketball. They really are like deep bench players. But we're going to get more into that in the episode. But yeah, I'm more at a 6. I'm not just too panicking, but at the same time, I'm like, okay, we need to start winning some games.
All right, yeah, I'm with you. So Xavier is at a 5.5 to a 6. If I had to estimate just from what I've seen on Grizzlies Twitter, I'd say they're at about an 8. And I would say David Buckler, if I had to guess, was at about a 9.9. Am I close on that, Dave?
You know, I'm going to surprise you here, man. I'm going to come down a little bit. I'm a 7 out of 10. I think considering we're 2 weeks into the season, 7 out of 10 is a pretty high score. And I know sometimes I trend more to being, you know, the sky is falling. I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I'll tell you what is my biggest concern. You know, we're a 30-14 fourth quarter in Portland away from being 0-8. I mean, that game that we won, they had to have a tremendous run in the fourth quarter to even win that game. My biggest concern, guys, to be honest, is when Ja Morant comes back, and we're all sort of counting down the games until Ja Morant comes back. I don't know that he solves the problems with this team. And we'll get into that a little bit later on, you know. But in general, I mean, he's not a rebounder. He's not a great defensive player. He's not a good three-point shooter. And we've got issues in multiple areas on this team. He will certainly help, of course, adding someone of his talent. But that's why I feel a sense of panic, because this isn't an elixir like Ja Morant comes back and now we're again one of the best teams in the West.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think he solves a lot of the main problems they've had, which, as you said, is the defense and the shooting to me. But he is such a special player that he can kind of cover up some of those gaps. He's just that good. That's why you look for a superstar like him in this league. Another guy that's gotten a ton of blowback at the start of this season, and Xavier, I've even seen it from you on your Twitter, Taylor Jenkins is taking some bullets, man. What do you think about his job coaching just in general so far right now? And you think his panic meter might be a little bit higher than yours right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. I have been saying some blows to Taylor Jenkins about him really being on the hot seat. It's at times it is a little bit emotional, but at the same time, though, it's like, okay, man, we're 1-7. It's the NBA. We know who's going to take the fall first, and typically that's the coach. Like last night, I felt like yesterday was a winnable game. Taylor Jenkins got outcoached by Eric Spoelstra. It's a lot of times, a lot of these games that we've played, he's gotten outcoached, and you got to come up with strategies right now to make ways with the players that you have available and try to win games. I understand Ja Morant isn't there. I understand that Steven Adams isn't there. I understand Brandon Clark. A lot of these guys that are old reliable isn't there. But guess what? You're the coach, and you have to find a way to substitute guys and put them in a way that you can win games. I know Jaren Jackson and Desmond Bane they've been playing phenomenal basketball. But you have to find a way to put those role players in a better situation for them to help out Jaren Jackson and Desmond Bane And I feel like Taylor Jenkins really hasn't fulfilled that coaching desire yet to do that. And, you know, Memphis has gone through so many coaches really throughout their whole franchise, when you really think about it, as the tenure here in Memphis. I can see, like, the Grizzlies riding with him due to the circumstances right now. I mean, I just opened up the injury PR for tomorrow. I saw somebody tweeted saying that the injury list looked like the Declaration of Independence. So you got to cut Jenkins some slack due to the fact, like, man, he really hasn't had a healthy roster at all. He's been coming in shorthanded. But at the same time, though, it's like, man, we was the second seed last year. We was the second seed year before that. And we was giving so much rave about Taylor Jenkins. At times, yeah, we did criticize him, but we was giving so much rave, it felt like he deserved, you know, at least a Coach of the Year nominee. But now it's like, man, like, are you able to lead us to the mountaintop? I mean, we're starting to have second guess, especially on Grizzlies Twitter.
Yeah, I'd like to add to that real quick, Matt. I think when we talk about panic around the team, we can talk about Ja's suspension and the injury to Brandon Clark and some other things. We have talked on this show a lot about the confidence we have in Zach Kleiman and the confidence we have in Taylor Jenkins. And I think the last 18 months has eroded some of that confidence in both of those guys. I mean, is it too early to say that the 2022 draft was a total disaster? I mean, it's pretty close to saying that Kleiman completely butchered the 2020. I mean, five guys, Lofton was an undrafted free agent, right? But the other four, they're not showing NBA skills. And so, you know, Kleiman's got to take some bullets here too. And my biggest problem is not one player. It's thinking maybe we don't have the leadership that we thought we did.
Yeah, I agree with you. That was going to be my next thing, is like Kleiman now is also taking bullets for the first time. And a lot of people point out that draft class, but man, I really didn't like the moves this offseason. Xavier talked about all of the changes that have been made to this roster, and he said the name Old Reliable. And that, to me, reminds me of Tyus Jones, who was Old Reliable. And remember, the last couple years, they've had a great record without Ja Morant. And Tyus Jones was a huge part of that. And now he is gone. Tyus is not having an awesome time in Washington, by the way. But, you know, he just fit with this team. He was a guy that had been here a long time and knew how to navigate that offense and played really well in the absence of Ja Morant. Now you replace him with guys like Marcus Smart. And, you know, to this point, it hasn't really showed to be a huge upgrade at that position by any means. Derrick Rose has also been on that injury list a lot, and that's bumping up guys like Jacob Gilliard to play as well in some spots when, as Xavier kind of alluded to, he may not really be ready for that kind of workload. And yeah, I mean, I just look at it, the roster construction coming into the season, just they did not address a lot of these same issues. I feel like, you know, we did this podcast all of last year, and the same things we talked about were the offensive just struggles in the half court. Just nothing looks easy at this point for this team scoring the basketball. And the thing that they've always hung their hat on is defense and rebounding, and that's just not really been there so far. Xavier, if it sounds like you're the least panicked out of all of us, and as you said, the Twitter world right now is seems to be really losing their minds on this deal and where the Grizzlies are going to be. And they've got kind of a tough schedule coming up with some tough teams. I believe they have another Utah game tomorrow. Who they got tomorrow? I forgot already.
Yeah, it's Utah.
It is Utah. And man, it's just hard to play there all the time. But do you see them being able to get back to, like, you know, everybody coming into the season was like, if we can be around 500 when Ja comes back, like, we'll be all right. But at this point, they got to go on a pretty big winning streak to, like, get back to that number. Do you think a record around 500 is still possible after 25 games?
Being honest, I don't see it happening. Right now, it's just a matter of treading water. And like, the 500 mark would be great, but just finding some type of groove. And then another thing, too, is getting guys healthy, because obviously right now we're not healthy. We got a bunch of G Leaguers out there. And I just want these guys to understand and know, like, man, it's a long season. Yes, we're getting it feels bad losing right now. But we look at previous years, like we go back to last year. Yesterday when we played the Miami Heat, they were under 500 team until the middle of middle of December last year. And here they made the finals. And then the team that we played in the playoffs, the Lakers, they started off 0-5 and they made it to the Western Conference Finals. Obviously, they did a huge overhaul. It's an extremely long season. I mean, we know that injuries are going to happen to a lot of players. I'm not wishing injuries on no players in the league, but we know injuries are going to happen. I know Dave said this in previous podcasts before. The playoffs come to the time. Sometimes the healthiest team really can come on top. So I'm hoping that the Grizzlies can be healthy down the line. You know, it will be great for us to be above 500 when Ja come back or near the 500 mark. But at this point, I feel like Ja is just itching to get out there because, I mean, obviously he sees the beating that we're getting right now. I've seen, like, the little post that he's been hinting towards, like he misses playing with the team. But I don't honestly, I don't see us reaching the 500 mark within those 25 games, these first 25 games.
Well, how about even getting to 50 wins for the season? I mean, the problem is you start chopping off 1-7 now. So over the remaining 74 games, we would have to go 49-25, essentially winning two of every three games for the rest of the season to get to that 50 win mark. And that's not going to be the number one seed or the number two seed in the Western Conference, most likely. So you know, the season's not over. It's a long season to go. But we certainly have put ourselves behind the eight ball in being in an advantageous position, you know, come April, health or not. You know, and the way Denver looks right now, I don't know. I mean, do you guys think we could go into Denver and win? Some of these teams look pretty good. The Western Conference, I think Minnesota, some of the other teams we'll talk later on in our college rankings, but – man, there's some really good teams out West this year.
Yeah, the depth is insane. The Thunder have also proved to be, like, legitimate. The Clippers still gelling, obviously, with the addition of James Harden. That's the Grizzlies' next game after the Jazz. And then they have the Lakers, the Spurs, the Celtics, the Rockets, the Suns, and the Timberwolves. And then another rematch with the Jazz. And that's their rest of the month of November schedule. I mean, that's a pretty tough schedule right there. You're talking about some teams that have title aspirations themselves. And as Xavier said, man, I know if I was Ja, like, I would be itching to get out there so bad in a league full of guys that seem to not really want to play a ton of basketball. Ja is one of those guys that wants to play every game as hard as he can. So I know we're all ready for him to get back out there for sure.
Can I make one comment, Matt, about the schedule? Because you bring please. Up the games that are upcoming. I hear a lot on Twitter and everything like, well, the Grizzlies had a tough start to the season. I totally disagree. In fact, we played New Orleans, Dallas, and Utah. They were not playoff teams last year. They might be better this year, but they were not playoff teams this year. We played Denver at home, Miami at home. We played the Wizards, and we played two against Portland. So, I mean, it's a reasonable start to the schedule. It's a tough league right now. We're not going to get nine games against the Hornets, right? I mean, the season started, I think, in a schedule to not be close to 500 right now is a real concern.
Especially – go ahead there.
I was going to say, and that makes my point of, like, when we watch those games, besides that Jazz game, we got blew out. But those other games – we had an opportunity to win, but it's just showing the other things that's going on. Sometimes it is the injuries. Sometimes it's us getting out-coached, and then the lack of talent that we just really do have on this team is exposing us right now. And I'm just really hoping, you know, if Taylor Jenkins is really jotting this down or Zach Kleiman is jotting this down. I know a lot of people are writing really want to trade this upcoming before the trade deadline, or the Grizzlies can somehow, you know, majestically get healthy or make a, you know, a swing or something. But it has been, you know, I would say it's not necessarily like a brutal start, but it's exposed a lot of the Grizzlies, of our struggles that we've been having the past year and a half.
Yeah, definitely. I think anytime you lose, as I said, you have losses to Washington, the Utah game, as I said, 20 points. And then, yeah, the Portland loss, not good. That Portland team's super young. Obviously, they get them on the second night of the back-to-back or whatever, or the, you know, two games in a row. But the thing that's most concerning to me is 0-4 at home is just not the Memphis way at all. The Grizzlies have always had an incredible home record. They obviously have a great crowd. There's, you know, the forum's always packed for Grizzlies games, and the fans show out, and it's a good basketball city. So it's, you know, a good turnout and a good home court advantage. Xavier, does it, you know, add any extra panic to you at all, the fact that they can't win in the forum right now? It needs to be a pretty big problem.
Yeah, it's funny that you said that, because I don't know if you guys know Terrence Howard, the guy that Hustle and Flow movie, Whoop That Trick. He's in town this week. He said that he wanted to go to a Grizzlies game. He wanted to be in that environment in which the Grizzlies can win a game and say, Whoop That Trick, at a live game. But things ain't looking too good right now, Terrence. You might have to come back a few months from now. But it is feeling, you know, as a fan, like it's dawning in a way, because I was so excited to, you know, to go to the Grizzlies games. It's always an experience. You know, the crowd is always rocking. We're in basketball city. We're always involved. And now we're seeing our team struggle in this Ja Morant era, in this next gen era, when it's always been high energy, fast flowing offense, you know, cool, spectacular things. And I can say, I'll be honest right now, you go to the Forum, I've been to 3 games this year already at the Forum. The energy is low because, you know, we're playing catch up a lot of the games. We're playing catch up. You know, Ja Morant isn't there. And, you know, it's a lot of concerns. Truth be told, most people don't want to spend a bunch of money knowing that your hometown team is going to lose. So, unfortunately, like, we're, you know, the true fans are going to show the support. But as far as, you know, the energy, you could tell that the energy is down at the FedEx Forum right now.
Yeah.
It's an interesting game, guys. You know, Utah's coming in. They just beat us by, 20 years. They beat us pretty good last time. Matt, you mentioned about the home struggles. This is a game Memphis has to get tomorrow night, right? I mean, if we're going to have a good season, Utah can't come in on a Friday night and box our ears in again, you know, without some real head scratching concerns. And Xavier, you know, I get to watch it on TV. It's not a big deal, but I give you a lot of credit for paying to go to the games. It's a much different experience to have to pay to go, right? I can kind of turn the game off if it's going south. So I give you a lot of credit, and I can sympathize in a way. You go, you want to see an exciting game. And then if you don't feel that energy in the crowd, that's extra concerning.
Definitely concerning. Tons of concerns through this first 8 games. As Dave said, hopefully they can get a win against Utah tomorrow and kind of turn some things around. Let's go over to Xavier's X's and O's, and let's get a little bit deeper on the defensive struggle so far. All right, Xavier's X's and O's. I'm basically just stealing Xavier's YouTube video right now. I just want to hear some more about what you've seen from this early season perimeter defense, some of the scheme, talked about Taylor Jenkins's kind of coaching philosophy and strategy through first couple games. What is it that you're seeing, Xavier, and what's standing out to you so far on the defensive end for the Grizzlies, which they've kind of hung their head on the last couple years, and it just has not looked like a Memphis defense to start this season?
Yeah, I'm not happy. You see, I'm wearing the same hoodie that I made the video in. This is the not happy fit right here. But I haven't been satisfied about the Grizzlies' defense, man. It's been pretty piss poor, abysmal. There's a lot of adjectives to describe it. You know, the over helping, it's we see it every single night. It's become a common occurrence. For it could be the worst 3-point shooting team coming into the game, and they'll be able to magically somehow make 15 to 20 threes on the Grizzlies, and everybody's questioning why. It's how bad our defense, specifically the perimeter, around the perimeter, they like to overhelp and they like to be in the help position. For some reason, Taylor Jenkins enjoys protecting the paint, in which I understand that you don't want to give out easy shots, easy opportunities. But I stated in my video, this is a brand new and different league. If it was the 90s, yeah, that would be perfect basketball defensive scheme in the 90s or in the early 2000s. But this is a brand new league in which teams are almost taking 50 attempts behind the 3-point line each year. The threes carry way more momentum than twos, and that's what's killing the Grizzlies, especially early in the games. Every single game, We're in a hole due to the fact the opposing team is draining threes. Jaren Jackson Jr., yes, he's a defensive player of the year, but he loves to help because you know why? He likes to come in weak side and get those blocks. At this point right now, we have to play everybody straight up because those threes are taking us out the game. We look at that last play from last night against the Miami Heat. I don't understand the play calling at the end right there. When it was a three-point game, Miami had the ball. It was 35 seconds left. Taylor Jenkins indicated the team to go double team. Why would you do that in this situation? Why not play that straightforward? You would have 10 seconds left. Possibly Miami missed the shot, but no. We gamble with the double team. They swing the ball around. They gave I can't think of his name. They triple J a wide open three. And you know, that was game. Like the execution behind that it's not smart right now. And Taylor Jenkins, I mean, obviously the press has asked questions about it because it has become a major concern now. And he's gonna stick and ride behind. We're gonna protect the paint. And we're just going to allow their non-shooters. He feels like the people that are shooting the threes are not just great three-point shooters to live and die behind it.
Yeah, and coming from that Budenholzer tree, that's something that's always been a knock on Coach Bud, right? And that's kind of where Taylor Jenkins kind of got his start and kind of his philosophy, and he's kind of hung by it. Last night, I thought, obviously, the last possession doesn't go down the way you want it to, but the coverage that they played on Bam specifically, they just gave him so many free throw line jumpers and floaters. And it's like, that's kind of what he does, like, the best. That's kind of what he wants to do. So yeah, strategically, I don't know if that was like some kind of overcompensation or what the thought was there, you know, getting Biombo still kind of like acclimated to what they're trying to do on defense. The other thing, though, that sticks out to me is the last couple of years, the hustle kind of stuff and the hustle stats, the little things that the Grizzlies have kind of, you know, been so good at and do better than every other team really hasn't been there to me so far, it doesn't look like. Like, the effort, you know, whether it's, you know, there is some luck involved, right? Like, they're like in the NFL, they talk about fumble luck. Like, there's 100 plays in a basketball game where you're looking for the luck of the bounce of the ball, and maybe that has something to do with it, but the Grizzlies just don't seem to be getting to as many loose balls and like making all those hustle plays. Dave, would you agree? Like, what are you kind of seeing from the guys just like in those small moments where they're fighting for possessions, trying to get steals, trying to get something going in transition because they can't, you know, score in the half court? And I just don't see the hustle stuff there so far this year.
Losing sort of breeds that, though, where it's, you know, they're like trying to find themselves individually and also as a team. And it's really been rough to watch. I frankly don't think we're a very good defensive team. And you could say, well, that's ridiculous because we have two of the previous defensive players of the year. Well, first of all, Marcus Smart looks slow to me, you know, and Jaren is defensive player of the year because he's spectacular blocking shots, you know, 33 minutes, guys, against Miami. He had 4 rebounds. I don't know if that's schematic. He shoots too many threes for me too. And I had someone on Twitter was like, if you're going to argue about Triple J, go talk to the refrigerator or something. Oh, okay. So, you know, I'm going to go talk to the refrigerator after this because we're not allowed to say anything constructive. 4 rebounds in 33 minutes against Miami. You know who had 4 rebounds also in that game? Dennis Smith Jr. for Miami, and he played 15 minutes. He's a guard. So I don't know if it's schematic with Triple J and they're trying to get him out to help the perimeter defense, Xavier, to your point. But I don't think we're a very good defensive team. And you know, we say we have these two defensive players here. This is not Jordan and Pippen locking down the other team. Other than Smart and Triple J that are above average, of course, who else in this team is, would you say, an above average defender?
Yeah, I mean, that's what they thought they were bringing in Marcus Smart to be. That obviously has not been the case. Above average defenders, like, you hope David Roddy can kind of grow into that just with, like, his versatility and, you know, just his body makeup and stuff like that. Like, you hope at least physically he can throw himself at people. But, yeah, I mean, the rest of the guys, like, have been covered up for their deficiencies by having Triple J in the back end, as well as Steven Adams kind of, like, you know, controlling the rebounding in the glass, which, as I said last year, like, that is a huge part of defense, right? Is like securing the rebound, finishing the defensive possession. And Steven Adams was just a huge loss in that department. Xavier, do you think the loss of Steven Adams has affected any of this defensive stuff that you're seeing, or is it just kind of a byproduct of a lot of new faces kind of trying to get acclimated to what they try and do?
I mean, we saw the last remnants of last year without Steven Adams, and we still play pretty good defense.
True.
I think it's more so towards, we don't have the same – we have a new roster, basically. But we don't have just guys that's typically buy into defense. These are a lot younger guys. Typically, you see players who are great defenders, you know, they've been in the league a lot longer. And we got a lot of guys playing out of position. Like David Roddy, I feel like he's a terrible perimeter defender because he doesn't have the feet to keep up with guards' quickness. And then as well, yes, he might have the body, but he does not have the length to guard those longer players.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Zaire Williams, he gets beat all the time. Like, he's playing defense on his tippy toes. I don't see why he's doing it. I'm not saying be flat-footed, but you're playing defense on your tippy toes. You're putting yourself at a disadvantage already. It's a lot of discipline behind defense. If you want to be a great defender, you got to want to play defense. And that clip that I did make a video in, I had showed a clip of how Denver executed a perfect defensive scheme to lock down the Lakers. You got to move. You got to communicate. You got to know your personnel. It doesn't just start on the court. Like, you have to practice playing defense if you want to be an elite defensive team, because guess what? The NBA now is all switches. Switch, switch, switch. It's not you guarding that one person the whole entire game. No. You're going to be able – because all these teams are running and screening, and you have to switch. And with that being – with you doing that, those players have to know when is the correct time to show, when is the correct time to fade. And they don't – we don't have those players right now who has the advanced IQ to execute that.
Yeah, and I keep going back to that 2022 draft. I just think the five individuals that we brought in might be the nicest guys in the world. I mean, Chandler's not with the team anymore. Lofton doesn't have NBA skills. He's a nice G League player. Everyone loves him. He's a great guy. They're going to switch and kill him. You talk about switching. He can't play NBA level defense. You know, Laravia has no NBA elite talent. I love Roddy. I love him because he's cool looking and, you know, he seems like a good dude. He's not an NBA rotational guy in the finals. Kind of none of these five people that they drafted. Williams Jr. came in as a 3-point specialist and he's terrible. You know, 3-point shooting. He just hasn't shown it. That's what he's brought here to do. Jordan Hawkins for the Pelicans had 31 points Monday night. 31. I mean, they lost. They had 31 points. I mean, there's young kids that come into this league that shoot the ball at a really high level. And this Grizzlies team needs shooting. I feel like I've been saying this since they came to Memphis. But that draft, now because to your point of the injuries, has been elevated and asked to do things and maybe have to play a few more minutes than they're used to playing and do some things. And they're just not NBA level players, or they're the, you know, ninth and 10th guys on the bench. And now they're the 5, 6, 7 guys. Zaire Williams, where the confidence at the beginning of the year looked good, doesn't play NBA level defense, occasionally finishes nicely on the break. He looks rough to me too. And when you have, 60% of your team that doesn't have an elite NBA skill, that's a lot to overcome. If Bane's not shooting the ball well and Jaren's not scoring, where do we win, guys?
Yep. Everything looks hard for him right now. You talk about the draft class. I say we head on over to Climbing Corner. Let's talk about one addition that they have made in Bismack Biyombo, and maybe some other things that we can look for, maybe a couple shooters for Dave. Climbing Corner. God, I hope we don't have to rename the segment soon. If they do, hopefully it's somebody else that has a good alliteration for the word corner. But yeah, so obviously Steven Adams being out to start the season was kind of a big shock to everybody. Me and Dave talked on the last episode about like how they were going to address that. Since then, they've gone and they got Bismack Biyombo. That's kind of their big move they've made in season, at a time where like most NBA teams had their rosters set, right? So like there weren't a ton of great options in the free agency market. So me and Dave had kicked around the idea of guys they could trade for instead. And you know, Robert Williams was a name that came up. Now he's getting surgery, probably done for the year. It just seemed like such a lateral move to me. Like Bismack Biyombo is kind of like can we go get Steven Adams for dinner? And mom's like, we got Steven Adams at home, and that's Bismack Biyombo. Like, that's just what he is. He rebounds, you know, but he doesn't shoot free throws well. And he doesn't rebound on the offensive end as good as Steven Adams, but nobody really does. Can't really score for you or anything like that. So it just didn't seem like the kind of big swing that was indicative to me of a front office and, like, you know, coaching staff that was really fired up for the season and trying to push all their chips in the middle, right? So, Xavier, what was kind of your reaction to them picking up Biyombo, and what have you seen from him so far?
You know, immediately I was just like, I'm just thanking God we finally got another big body, because, man, it was just rough at that time period. Just Jaren, Xavier Tillman, and then basically Kenny Lofton is your big body. And I mean, Bismack, he's been playing pretty decent. He's only had three games in. You don't ask for much of him. Just get rebounds and set screens. So the team should just feel like out of place, because he's sort of, like you said, is a Steven Adams role. Obviously, he's not a home run swing big, but I do find it interesting of, like, what contract they signed him. They signed him to a one-year, $5 million contract. That could be prove something that he could be a tradable asset later down, maybe around the trade deadline. Hopefully, you know, he can get a few more rebounds. Maybe he can have a double-double and increase his, you know, trading value. But obviously, you know, he's not going to just impact this game so hugely. He had 10 rebounds last night. He's a great picker. He's able to utilize the pick and roll. You know, he's a great screener, and then he can roll to the basket. But, I mean, if I had to grade it, it's like a C+. It's not nothing spectacular.
Yeah, it's kind of like your favorite NFL team, like, taking, like, a guard in the first round. Like, you're so fired up for it, and just doesn't really pan out to be anything that interesting. Dave, we talked about last time, like, if they did a move like this, that kind of told us all we needed to know about how the front office views this season. Do you think that still holds true with this move?
I think it holds true. Bismack Biyombo, I mean, and in fairness to him as an NBA player, he's been in the league since 2011. Good for him. He's carved out a career. And that's wonderful. And he you know, he's made some money now for a long time. He averages 5.1 points for his career, you know, a little under six rebounds. This guy's not changing anybody's trajectory. In fact, I kind of feel like if a guy's on another team and I kind of laugh at him, I don't really want him on my team. I mean, Bismack Biyombo has been in the league a long time. I never took him seriously as an NBA player. His name's kind of goofy, you know, and, like, I didn't fear those Charlotte teams that he was playing on. He wasn't doing anything that I thought affected winning basketball. Now, that being said, he didn't have a nice game the other night, of course, but he was a minus 16 on the plus minus. I just feel like, all right, we got Bismack Biyombo. He's a guy. He's just a guy. You know, he makes millions of dollars. Good for him. He's certainly not helping this team long term. And, you know, what are we doing? We're not waiting for Steven Adams to come back. He's not coming back till next season. So where does this take us? We have Bismack Biyombo, and that, you know, what's the next step? The lottery.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's the way it's looking right now with the worst record in the league. You know, you're right in line for that. So I don't know if there's any big prospects that can necessarily fix this problem right now for him. But, you know, I think it was kind of a kick the can down the road, see if this kind of helps at all. I thought it was interesting that he, like, found his way into the starting lineup so soon and was playing big minutes. Like, you know, obviously injuries are a factor in that as well. But it just doesn't give me a big, you know, it's not a big vote of confidence that it was Bismack Biyombo that they ended up with, Dave. As you said, nice player, fine. I'm glad you've made your money and all that. But, like, it just doesn't do a whole lot for me. And it just kind of tells you, like, what the answers are. And there weren't many, you know, for them to try and fill that role for him. You know, Dave, you talked about targeting some shooting. Is there anybody else that's on your radar that you think that can pick up even some perimeter defense, a 3-and-D guy, anybody that you think that the Grizzlies could pick off at this trade deadline, which is still a ways away, but they got to do something. I mean, as you said, the roster's just not good enough right now.
It's not good enough. It's crazy, too, with the Luke Kennard stuff, because that was, you know, I look back on last year, that was a really sneaky, under-the-radar move that seemed like a low-cost upgrade at the three-point line, and he came out this year, it looked like he had zero confidence. And now, you know, Xavier, your Twitter was funny because you're like, hey, he hit three bombs from the Nard Dog, whatever, like, you know, because he hit three three-pointers and we're ready to like shut Twitter down. Jordan Hawkins had 31 points for the Pelicans. People are scoring all over this league. Sasser for the Pistons coming off the bench. Yeah, I mean, there's shooters everywhere except in Memphis. It's like we could just never get shooters. And, you know, Desmond Bane fell from the sky and he's been great. But you got to think at some point other teams are going to really take him out of our game plan, right? Because
they did it last night.
Right, because other coaches are watching us, and if we take out Desmond Bane, they got nobody who can consistently hurt us. Mike, you know, I always talk about Jordan Clarks from Utah. I just wish we had a guy that could come in and drop 30 sometimes and doesn't need the ball all the time. But I don't know who the player is out there. It's just very evident. It's not on this roster right now. And I love Desmond Bane, but when he starts getting doubled and triple teamed, as it's going to happen as they play better defensive clubs, I think we're going to really continue to struggle to score. And Ja doesn't solve that problem. That's the thing I said earlier in the show. He'll help us in transition, but if we're not rebounding the ball, we don't even get out in transition as much.
You know, it's funny you said that. You know, I consider those guys as, you know, bucket getters, instant offense. Cam Thomas.
Boy.
Cam Thomas having a pretty great year.
Your boy has been on fire. Cam Thomas is bucket.
Remember I said we should trade Ja for Thomas and Miles and Bridges and Nick Claxton and two number ones? Who would hang up the phone? Brooklyn would hang up the phone.
Cam Thomas would be great.
I see somebody else stepping up for the Nets. I mean, as well, he's been on multiple teams. Lonnie Walker, he's like a instant microwave type guy that comes off the bench. Yesterday, Cam Thomas got injured. Lonnie Walker literally filled in his steps. He finished last night, I think, with 26 points. Since then, he's averaging like 20 points off the bench. And, you know, hopefully he's not on a high contract. You look at another guy as well, like Kelly Oubre. Nobody wanted to sign him at all.
He's been really
and
good.
Now he's a 20-point scorer, and Philly is the number one team in the East right now. So it's guys out there. It's a lot of I don't know. Is Kleiman like the role player type guys? He doesn't want a guy. He hasn't made that move of a straight pure bucket getter off the bench. So he wants the role players because he wants them to fit this mold between Ja, Bane, and Jaren. Well, guess what? They haven't really been on the court together a lot of the times, most of the time, except for the playoffs. And right now, we're struggling.
And can we just admit that the John Conchar experiment is pretty much dead at this point? And I don't know. I don't know if it's John Conchar, and maybe it's emblematic of a bigger problem, guys. That I don't see improvement from year to year to year on a lot of our players. I mean, Conchar's fine, but is he getting better? Is he better this year than he was last year? I don't see it. And so then I start wondering about the Taylor Jenkins coaching piece of this. And when we're not seeing the growth of the players, I mean, I think LaRavia has gotten worse.
I was about to say, we've actually seen regression. Zaire's gotten worse. Jake LaRavia has gotten worse. Brandon Clark has gotten better as an NBA player, but his shot specifically, his rookie year was his best shooting year. And he, you know, had an actual good looking jump shot that rookie year and somehow has gone back to what he looked like in college, which was a terrible jump shot. It's a team full of guys that have bad shooting form. And it's crazy to me in the NBA now where everybody pretty much like comes off a conveyor belt with the same jump shot. And the Grizzlies have none of those guys. You know, even Desmond Bane, who is a great 3-point shooter, his shot is a little bit different than most people. Jaren still shoots from his belly button. There's just a lot of shooting form problems I see with this team. You mentioned a team in Detroit with Marcus Sasser. They got two guys who are both banged up, Bogdanovich and Joe Harris. Those are two shooters that you could pick up. Other than that, I don't really – and a couple big guys, too. Bring James Wiseman back to Memphis, too. Maybe that's their next – experiment they can run after his brief stint with the Memphis Tigers. I'm sure he'd be a welcome addition, and he's getting DNPs in Detroit. So I don't know. I don't know what the move is, but as Xavier said, Kleiman's never really been the one to cash in his chips too early. He likes to retain those draft picks, even though they're at the back of the draft, and it's hard to hit on those guys. He's hit on a couple, but last couple years not been so good. The time has never been more, like, it's never been more like, we need to get something than right now. And it at this point, like, I would take a Jordan Clarkson, who's a guy that I have not liked every time Dave's brought up. Like, I'm not a fan of Jordan Clarkson at all. But that's the kind of guy they need right now. They need somebody who can just take over for, like, 8 to 12 minutes and just go and get buckets, or at least get, like, you know, clean shots, take guys off the dribble one-on-one, and just, like, kind of relieve some of this pressure. And that, I think, is the thing they miss the most with Ja. Ja does not fix your three-point shooting problem by himself based on his three-point shooting. But the fear of him just going to the basket over and over again draws defenders in. It makes the shooting windows much bigger for guys who are not great shooters and need all the help that they can get. And I think we're seeing that now. Like, they're just not able to generate easy shots for guys. Everything is hard. Everything is contested. It's really hard to get these guys open looks right now. And I think that's the place where Ja's missed the most, in my opinion. NBA title contenders ranked by the College Football Playoff Committee. Xavier, you missed the last one from us with us. Actually, let me grab my notebook and see what we ended up with last time.
And by the way, Matt, next year when the college committee goes to the 12-team playoff, we'll have to expand our list, right?
Right now? Yeah, dude. Especially with how many teams, like, it was really hard to find four teams. I don't know about you guys, but, like, it was hard to narrow it down with the way that things have started so far. I know for a fact that we had Boston and Denver. All right, here we go. I got our list from last week. Boston, Denver, the Lakers, Milwaukee, and Phoenix were our five teams receiving votes in that order. So Boston was number one for us. Denver, the Lakers, Milwaukee, and Phoenix. Dave, I'll start with you. Give me your list of NBA title contenders.
I loved it last week when you looked back at the previous season and, like, Atlanta got a vote, Dallas got a vote. It's really interesting. We think it's going to be the same four every week between the three of us, but it's not. There is ups and downs. And I think that the fourth best team in the league right now is Milwaukee. I think they're going to figure it out with Dame. They're not a perfect team. I think they're going to make some moves, but I like most of their pieces. If Middleton stays healthy, I think they're pretty good. I have the Sixers third. The addition by subtraction theory there. Now I heard Embiid even say in a recent interview, everybody likes each other. Everybody wants to play ball. I don't want to hear that in January. All right, we hear enough of the narrative. Let's not keep piling on James Harden for the next, you know, 4 or 5 months. But that team looks exciting and has a pretty nice structure right now with the superstar, the rising talent in Maxey. Even Tobias Harris is a nice player and some good role players. I really like Philly in that third spot. They beat my second team, Boston. That's, I think Boston's better. It's a long season. They beat the Celtics, go back a couple points there tonight. I think Boston is going to be a dynamite team in the playoffs, and they're just still kind of integrating some new pieces. Love the Celtics there at number two. Denver's clearly number one. Matt, I pushed back on you all season last year. Every time I watch the Nuggets, I love everything about them. I love their coaching. I love their teamwork. And when things kind of get stuck in the mud, they have a player that just elevates either himself if he needs to, or his teammates. And my respect for Joker has just gone right through the roof. He's just fabulous to watch. I'm terrified of him, but it's hard not to really, really admire him.
Yeah, they've been great. Only one loss so far against Minnesota, who's looked really good. Philly, I did not expect them to be in there. They probably do deserve it. Clearly, they're glad to be rid of James Harden. Tyrese Maxey's been awesome, by the way. Kelly Oubre, as Xavier mentioned, was a great addition for them as well. I think they are definitely deserving. I'm not on my list, but Xavier, I'll kick it to you. Who's your top four right now?
All right. Number four spot, I got Dallas. That's going to surprise a lot of people. I caught the Dallas game. I sat behind the Dallas bench. I was chopping it up with Kyrie Irving and Mark Cuban, man. Those are some pretty nice people down there. But that's not the reason why I put them at four, because I'm liking what I'm seeing from Dallas. In terms of, a lot of people talk about Kyrie Irving isn't shooting well, but he's playing some great basketball. You know, he's not dropping those eye-popping stats. As well, they made some big additions. Adding Grant Williams has paid dividends, because here you have is a guy that's a sort of a defensive anchor. He's shooting the ball almost 50% behind the three-point line.
Unreal.
He has been fantastic. And then they pick up Derek Lively, That's a great center addition. You know, when I think of Dallas when they're success, I think of Tyson Chandler. If Derek Lively can mold his game as Tyson Chandler or even be better than Tyson Chandler, man, that's a lob threat for Luka, a rim protector. And they've always had a lack of big since the Luka Doncic era. That's a big that they can rely on and grow for a long while, man. I'm liking what I'm seeing from Dallas.
That's a great comp, though, Xavier, with the Tyson Chandler. He turned into a really nice player for those teams.
Yeah, yeah. So I got Dallas at number four. Number three, I have the Philadelphia 76ers. Philly, like Dave said, they playing some great basketball right now. I want to give credit to Nick Nurse because I feel like he's the one that unlocked the key for the Philadelphia 76ers success. For one, you know Nick Nurse. He's going to emphasize defense. But another thing, too, from the previous years with Harden and Embiid, yeah, Harden would give you 10 assists, but it was just him holding the ball, him manipulating the pick and roll with him and Embiid. It wasn't really getting others involved. We look at the 76ers team right now, made a video about this last night. They have four players right now that's averaging 20 or more points between Maxey, Embiid, Tobias Harris, and Oubre. They're getting people involved. You want those other close to star players to get you those points and whatnot because – you know, Embiid can get burnt out. We've seen Embiid get burnt out, especially in the playoffs. As well, we unleashing Mad Maxey, man. Tyrese Maxey is such a phenomenal player. I love Tyrese. I'm loving what I'm seeing from the 76ers. Boston is number two. I know they've lost two in a row, but, man, they still look really good. You got, such a solid starting five. You know, they're hungry to make another playoff run, so I have them. And then, of course, number one is Denver. I mean, they just look like they're going to win a championship again, truth be told. Yeah, it's sad to see Jamal Murray going to be out for possibly the next month or two. I do think there might take a little falling on that. But, man, when you got Jokic, man, it's just, you know, he's the leader of this team. He's going to keep them boys intact. Mike Malone is such a great coach. I don't see them making a big drop, even without Jamal Murray.
Yeah, Murray is definitely a huge loss for them. I think I'm surprised at how good they've looked so far. The thing, Jokic is unbelievable, right? But the thing that everybody always talks about is like, how much does this guy actually love basketball? He clearly, you know, he spent all of his time in his home country over the offseason, and he loves horses and all these things. It's like, how focused is this guy on like trying to repeat? It does seem like he is more fired up at the beginning of this season than he was to start last year. He looks like he really wants to go back to back with this team, which I think is possible. I think they have an awesome roster. And I will say, because of the depth of this league and how good the West is, if they go back to back, it's one of the most impressive, you know, back to back title defenses in history. I mean, they're going to have a gauntlet getting through the West. If they get through the season as the number one seed, that's really impressive. I love to see teams make a good effort to try and defend a title in any sport. All right, I'll give you my top four, and I'm going to start with one and two because obviously we all have the same thought here. Denver number one for me, Boston number two. And then I have two teams that neither of you guys mentioned, and I have Golden State at number three. They lose last night to all of our number one teams on the road without Draymond. You know, they've been dealing with injuries themselves. They have a lot of new pieces that they are acclimating. If we look at the Warriors' start last year compared to this year, it's a major difference. They're playing much better on the road. It's a team. Klay has looked a lot better. Klay has had some good games under his belt. And I think last night was like a good loss for them. They had an opportunity to tie that game late too. So I have Golden State at number three, and just the pedigree is still there. And anytime you have Steph, like, you have a chance. That guy is that good. The Chris Paul thing has not been like super seamless, but like, I think he has unlocked that second unit for him a little bit. And he's a guy that you want coming off your bench. And if not, he will be a guy that they can turn into something else that will be very valuable to them. Similar to like what they did to D'Angelo Russell when they got him, and everybody was like, that's kind of weird. That's a weird fit there, but they turned D'Angelo Russell into Andrew Wiggins, who ended up being their second most important player of that title team in 2022. So I have Golden State at three still. And then number four, and I'm glad that they're getting some mention because they do deserve it the way they've started this year. Minnesota is really good. their defense is nasty. Rudy Gobert has kind of come back as a really solid defensive player of the year kind of candidate. He's acclimated himself better than what he was last year. And Anthony Edwards is a bona fide killer, man. He was awesome in the end of that Boston game. Had some good moments last night or two nights ago, whenever they played the Pelicans in those throwback uniforms, looking great as well. Great coaching staff there, and they just deserve to be mentioned. And Anthony Edwards is a guy that I look at as a similar type to Ja Morant. He's a superstar that you're looking for and trying to build around, and you're just lucky you get the opportunity to draft a guy like that, and he just falls into your lap. So that's it for me. Denver, Boston, Golden State, and Minnesota. Based on our rankings, the top four for us this week are Denver, Boston, Philly, who I did not have on my list, and then Golden State, who was my number three team, so they got enough points to sneak in on the four spot, and then Dallas and Milwaukee and Minnesota all tied with 1 point apiece this week.
Hey, Matt, how about a quick shout-out to Mike Conley and what he's brought to Minnesota, too, that, you know, love him here in the core four, but the professionalism around
Kyle Anderson,
the point guard position really helps that team, which is a little bit of a clunky, weird roster at times.
Sure.
And Conley's been really nice for them and settling things down. Jaden McDaniels.
Awesome guy. Awesome.
Yeah,
player.
I mean, so, and good for Slo-Mo too, right? He's still giving them quality minutes. So I'm glad that they were mentioned today because they've, if nothing else, they've become a league pass team that's fun to watch.
For sure, for sure. Before we go, I want to talk about, and I want to see what your guys' reaction has been so far. Tomorrow is going to be night two, I guess, of this in-season tournament for the NBA. Xavier, have you enjoyed it? Has it changed anything for you? Like, for the three of us, we were going to be watching basketball no matter what on these specific nights that they've designated, but did the courts, do the jerseys, do you feel any added, like, competitiveness from these games so far?
I don't. It's just a regular basketball, regular season basketball game to me. Maybe, you know, if I go to the game, I can see something different, but I don't see the team, especially, you know, watching just the Grizzlies. If I focus on another team and see, like, if the energy around them is crazier, then yeah, but I don't see anything different. I don't – and now think about it, last Friday, I don't even recall, like, if anybody just, you know, specifically just went crazy, had berserk stats. So – I just feel like it's just another regular season game, and I'm still trying to understand what exactly is going on with the in-season tournament.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really knows at this point in the group stage. I think once it gets to the knockout round, maybe it'll start to make a little bit more sense. Dave, what about you? The in-season tournament doing anything for you?
Well, yeah, I got a migraine headache looking at that court in Portland, that fire engine red court. I mean, some of the graphics have been a little distracting, actually, around. I know what they're trying to do and trying to make it special. I like Vegas, so I think it'd be kind of fun to go to the finals. I think that would be kind of neat. But the actual games themselves, it doesn't really do anything for me. You know what's going to happen, though, guys? A team's going to win the title like Sacramento. Or, you know, or the Orlando Magic. They're going to win the tournament. And it's like, this is the big stepping stone. It's not going to matter at all. They get the playoffs, lose in the second round. You know, I could just see it being one of those teams that, like, it's like the New York Jets love winning the offseason, you know, the headlines in the offseason. So we're going to have a team like the Pacers win the tournament. Like, oh, my God, and Halliburton's holding the trophy up, you know, then they're out in the first round or something. You know, not gonna make any difference for the entirety of the season.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think everybody expects these younger teams on the way up to take it more seriously. The Sacramentos of the world, Minnesota, even an Orlando or a Detroit that has a really young core and thinks that they can look to it as a stepping stone.
Houston, maybe, who's off to a good start.
Sure, yeah. But I just look at it, and I look at the top of the league right now, and it's all the best teams, right? And I just don't see why Boston, Denver, Philly, Milwaukee would, like, try and take a couple nights off. Like, even if they just look at it as a couple more regular season games, I think they're still going to try and be competitive and win every night, because that's what most of them try and do. And so we'll see. I think it's interesting. It's definitely geared towards the younger generation, because if you remember the first night of it last Friday, whenever the first night of the in-season tournament was, like, earlier that day, Adam Silver had made comments about, like, he was concerned that the next generation of fans, like, aren't watching their games. And it's clearly geared towards them, right? Like, it's bright colors on the courts. It's different jerseys that most of us traditional NBA fans hate. So it's I think it's, like, geared towards the next generation, which is why it's off-putting to some of their fans who already, you know, love the league enough to where, like, we were going to watch no matter what. You didn't have to come up with this new idea or whatever. But I just want to get you guys' take on it for sure. And we'll see how it goes tomorrow as well in the in-season tournament. But, guys, that's all I've got. Another great episode, as always. Check us out, BluffCityMedia.com, at BluffCity_media on Twitter, at the Core 4 Podcast on Twitter. I'm Matt H. Gill on Twitter, or X, I guess we're calling it now. Dave, plug your socials for us. We were talking about your great videos. Tell everybody where they can get your stuff.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and YouTube at Zaytime Takes. And then as well, you can find me on TikTok as at _XZAY. I appreciate you guys tonight for another great episode, of course.
As always, Dave, hit him with that Twitter.
Yeah, it's at DLB19338. And Xavier, I really have enjoyed the videos lately. And so I just love seeing your stuff, man. Really, really, really good content.
Thanks, good Dave.
With you guys. Yep, good talking to you guys. Good podding with you, as always. Hopefully the next time we talk, the Grizzlies have a couple more wins under their belt. But for this week, that'll do it.
Stolen by Morant. Hammer, nail, coffin. This baby is over.